Now, on this Invest Talk podcast, Justin Klein listens to your questions.
Hey guys, love the show, listen to it frequently. I have a question on Affirm, AFRM.
And provides unbiased answers.
The answer is it's good. unfortunately, I didn't, that's not something that had great hindsight. I'm just looking at it here. They had earnings after hours today. They're up 25%, it looks like, after hours from 92.
Invest Talk. Over 32 million downloads and counting. Your participation makes it unique. 888-99-SHARP.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, September 9th, 2021 edition of Invest Talk. And Labor Day is now in the rearview mirror. I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday weekend and everyone stayed safe. And we enter the post-Labor Day part of the year where we prepare for the holidays, which are next, and the fourth quarter. And that means most of the year is well behind us. And in the meantime, now that we have a lot to look forward to here in the markets, you need to stay vigilant and stay focused on the task at hand, which is making consistent decisions, the right decisions about your money, about your investments each and every day. And that's really what it's all about. It's not about hitting that one grand slam investment and suddenly you're well off and you have all the financial freedom you want. Sure, that could happen, but it's very rare. And for most of you, you're going to achieve your success by making smart decisions day after day. And that's what I'm here to help you do. And on this podcast, I'm going to operate with my mission statement, which is independent thinking and shared success, which means when I'm talking about the market, strategy, sector, a stock, I'm here to present it all without bias. Give you the facts as I see them in front of me, using my 20 plus years of investment experience and all the data that I'm looking at right now. So I'm Justin Klein, and I encourage you to contact me with your finance and investment questions and interact with me right now during our live stream program. But if you're listening after hours of 4 to 5 Pacific time, you can still leave your message. Just give that same number a call, 888-99-CHART. Leave a message on our InvestTalk voice bank, and we will answer it on a future show. So let's get right to our first listener question now.
Hey, my name is Dip, and I'm calling from Northern California. Thank you guys for all your help. I have a question on stock Lockheed Martin, ticker symbol LMT. They specialize in aerospace and defense, and it seems like their net income has increased year after year, and their PE is pretty much at the low end right now compared to where it was about a year or two ago. And I was wondering if right now is a good time to get into Lockheed Martin. Thanks, and I look forward to your response. Appreciate it. Bye.
All right. Looking at Lockheed Martin, one of the largest defense contractors in the world. And this is technically, this is in a downtrend. It hit a 52-week high of about $400 a share. Now we're down 12.5% or so to around $350 a share. And this is one of the stocks that I definitely do not like. We just got out of Afghanistan after a 20-year war there, and we're talking about pulling out of places like Syria and Iraq, and frankly, the U.S. population doesn't have a lot of appetite for these foreign wars anymore after what's happened in Vietnam or with Afghanistan, which echoes of Vietnam, et cetera. And our fiscal situation as a country, there's the mantra of let's stop these wars and focus the spending on domestic policies. I think that rings true for a lot of Americans, whether you're on the left, right, center, doesn't matter. And so I think the tailwinds of the profits from Lockheed Martin has reaped over the last 20 years are frankly just not going to be nearly as easy, and they're probably going to shrink. And then when you think of where defense spending should be focused on, it's going to be more and more focused on IT spending, on cybersecurity, and far less on the things that Lockheed Martin builds: aircraft carriers, missiles, satellites, submarine combat systems, missile defense systems. We have the best in the world. And I don't really think that the U.S. government is going to spend nearly as much on those type of systems going forward. And so this is not a name. I think this is a value trap in my mind. And so I would pass on Lockheed Martin. Now, my focus point today is based on the story behind this headline: growth versus value investing. What do you need to know about both to make the most of your money? You know, value and growth investing can be divided in all kinds of sub-strategies and competing philosophies, and we're going to break those down for you and help you understand the difference and the subgenres. Also, let's touch on going green, not a funds going green, with new names like sustainable and green and ESG. And I want to highlight some facts about a lot of these quote-unquote green funds. Next, Coinbase says the SEC is investing in its crypto lending program. This was a very interesting story and pretty funny to me, especially the CEO's Twitter rant that was pretty embarrassing. So we're going to look at that. And then lastly, Janet Yellen says the Treasury could exhaust its cash conservation measures in October. That's in less than a month. So what could the ramifications be for the market as a whole? So that's what's on my mind, but ultimately I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. S&P was down about 21 points today, half a percent drop there. The NYSE, that was down 67 points, about a third of a percent there. So a very modest down day in the markets. Nothing too crazy, nothing that you should probably be worried about. But once again, I have been saying this for a while. The back half of the year is expected to be a lot choppier. We were at a choppy summer, and this is likely to be a choppy back half of the year because the outlook for the economy, the markets for stimulus are a lot murkier. And I think that's what's bringing a bit of volatility into the market. But there's still a lot of cash out there, so I don't expect a pullback to be too dramatic. Now we're heading into a quick break, but I'm here and ready to answer your questions. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Summer's moving fast, and you can't afford to lose focus. So have your finance and investment questions ready and call Justin Klein now. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, I had a question for you guys. I heard you guys, for example, say that Procter & Gamble's PE range was 17 to 26. And I was just wondering, how do you guys calculate that? How are you guys calculating that? Thank you.
All right. Well, we're looking at what is called MarketSmith, a piece of software that we subscribe to, and it's the 5-year PE range. So that's just what the stock has generally traded at on a multiple over the past 5 years, and whether it's on the high end or the low end. Now, it could be trading at the high end of that range for a good reason, or the low end of that range for a good reason. But it's a good kind of temperature gauge of how high the multiple is compared to the recent past. And yeah, 5 years is still relatively recent. But high growth companies tend to trade at high multiples. And if they've been growing for a little while, then that P range is going to be rather large. Whereas maybe slower growth, large financial companies, for example, they typically will trade at smaller multiples. For example, JP Morgan. Its P range over the last 5 years is 9 to 16. Now it's at 13, right, pretty much in the middle. And you can see that those type of companies that are large have not a whole lot of market share to grow because they have a big part of the market. They tend to trade at those lower multiples. So that's kind of a good snapshot. It's one data point. You never make any decision based on one data point, but it's helpful to see kind of where that company tends to be trading from a multiple perspective. Now, my focus point today is based on the story behind this headline, growth versus value investing, and what you need to know about both to make the most of your money. So let's talk about that for a bit. Now, since really 2007, growth has outperformed value dramatically. And you can see why that is. Well, we've been in a period of financial repression. 2008 was a time period where banks, which are historically value stocks, fell out of bed, and many of them, some of them went bankrupt, Lehman Brothers of the world, and others were just decimated, their balance sheets, et cetera. And then you had financial repression where rates were held basically at zero, and that is very beneficial for growth companies, multiples. I've talked about this before. When you do a cash flow analysis over the long term and you have a very low discount rate because interest rates are low, then those growth companies, those future cash flows 5, 10, 15 years out, suddenly become very valuable today. And so that's why growth has really outperformed up until pretty much last summer. And that's when it peaked out. And that's really when inflation started to really ramp up. And you started to see the value trade suddenly come back in vogue. And this was the last time that was in vogue was after the dot-com bubble. So from 2000 to 2007, you can see that there are periods. You can go back decades and you'll see that there are periods where growth tends to outperform, other periods where value starts to outperform. But let's talk a bit about what that means. Well, value investing, that's usually pretty straightforward. Companies trading at low multiples, oftentimes paying a very high dividend, but they're low growth. And it's all about their consistent cash flow and earnings today. Now, growth investors hunt for companies that are on their way up, that may go on to dominate industries for decades to come and have a long growth trajectory going forward. Now, you can make a lot of money both ways, and you don't have to stick to just value investing or just growth investing. It's really about finding the best values either side. So sometimes paying a higher multiple than the market for a growth name can make a lot of sense because they're going to grow into that higher multiple if they continue on with that consistent growth. Other times, paying an exorbitant multiple can be very detrimental to your portfolio because even if they do grow consistently, that multiple is so high that it's going to take really decades for them to grow into that stock price. Cisco's a good example. They still have not gotten back to their 2000 high. Even though their business is still around, they've been growing. But because the multiple was so high at that point, they just were never going to be able to grow that fast to meet that type of valuation. But you can make big gains. The Amazons of the world, Microsofts, even non-tech companies, your Starbucks of the world, they climbed 433% between 2000 and 2006 as they really ramped up the coffee culture and spread across America. Okay. Now, growth stocks rarely pay dividends because they take their available resources and they put it into expanding, growing. But there are some metrics that you want to look at. First, return on equity, making sure that the money that they're reinvesting is actually beneficial to you, the shareholder. And they're not just throwing good money after bad. There's a lot of companies in today's market that are losing money consistently. And they're really in the business of issuing more shares so they can plow it into the business, lose more money, tout a big, great story, but frankly, their business is just not economical. Okay, so you need to make sure that their profit margins are good and they can consistently grow over the long term, not just for a couple of years, because in order for high multiple growth stocks to be cheap today, they need to have a reasonable multiple and grow for really a decade plus at a high rate. And that's how you're successful on the growth side. Now, after the break, I'll get into the value side and what makes sense when you're looking at value companies. Now, you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. For investors, the need to remain vigilant never ends. And that's why we're here. Help you manage your fear and greed. Weed through the good data and the bad data. And help you become better investors. So we're taking your calls live at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, I gave you a brief synopsis of what a growth company is, but let's dig into what a value company typically would be classified as. Well, buying a value company is looking for those that typically are trading below their industry peers, meaning from a multiple perspective, PE, price to sales, book value, etc. And you're mainly focusing on cash flows, earnings, dividends, assets, revenues, not necessarily the growth of those metrics. Now, you want them to be growing, but you don't necessarily need them to be growing at a high rate. And oftentimes, especially in a high inflationary environment, those companies tend to do better. They have better pricing power. They have large amount of fixed assets that can be deployed and have room to grow in value. And so that's one of the big reasons why value stocks tend to do better. And they can be small, they can be emerging markets, they can be giant corporations with household names. A good value is a good value. And the focus is less on that growth of revenue, which growth stocks are usually classified as. So those are the main differences, and you can blend value and growth stocks into a diversified portfolio. You probably should. You probably shouldn't focus on one or the other because that's too dogmatic. It's ignoring what could potentially be giant, great companies on the growth side, and it's ignoring those companies that are undervalued and underappreciated on the value side as well that can also be fantastic investments. So you can make great money either way, but you have to understand what type of investor you are first off, and whether you can succeed at both, or maybe one is just right for you. So hope that helped you, give you a little perspective on the growth versus value discussion. Now, when people take the time to leave an InvestTalk podcast review on iTunes, I'd like to thank them for their courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. So here are some questions from iTunes reviewers. Tommy asks, I was wondering about the proper steps to take when rolling over a 401k into an IRA. Would it be best to contact someone like TD Ameritrade and have their rollover team assist, or should I fill out the paperwork myself? Great question, and I like that you're looking to roll over your 401k. I'll give you how we do it for clients. What we do is we send them DocuSign documents to set up a new IRA over at TD. That's who our broker is. Now, you can use Fidelity, E-Trade, Schwab. I would recommend one of the bigger names, especially because equity trading is free at all of them now. It's just really about what your preferences are for research and technology and customer service, et cetera. They all have their strengths, and you want to do a little background research there. And they'll help you probably walk you through the steps. But how we do it is we say, here, we'll help you open the IRA, and then here is an address for TD Ameritrade. It's in Texas, to have the check made out to or sent to, but it's made out to TD Ameritrade Clearing for benefit of your name, IRA. And so when it's sent to TD, they know whose IRA to put it in, and you should probably do something similar. Obviously, Fidelity, that's going to be National Financial Services that you'd have the check made out to, etc. So it's a little bit of a process, but not too cumbersome. It's really the main thing is make sure you know who to contact over at your old employer to cut that check for you to deposit into your new IRA, wherever that is, hopefully one of the bigger brokers. Let's go to Raphael in Dallas looking at WA MCX. Do you own it or are looking to buy it?
Hey, Justin. Hope you're doing well today. I own some in my Roth, and I was thinking about buying some more, but I wanted to hear what your thoughts are.
Okay. Well, I would really want to see it in the midst of all of your portfolio and see that spread. But you're looking at Wasatch Ultra Growth. This is a small cap growth mutual fund. The expense ratio is about 1.9%, 1.19%, excuse me. So it's a little bit high for my taste, but historically it's done very, very well. How old are you?
25.
Okay, so you're young. You should be aggressive. This is a 91% in U.S. stocks, about 7.5% in non-U.S. stocks, and then cash for the balance. Top holding is Freshpet, a lot of very small companies that that most people have not heard of, but it's a small cap growth name. So that's what you are getting here. A lot of these companies are probably going to trade at high multiples. The Freshpet currently trades at 169 PE ratio. So you can see that's what you're going to be paying up for a lot of these names. Now, the good thing is I like small cap growth over, say, large cap growth, because small caps have a lot more room to grow on the upside than those large caps that are already huge companies have high multiples. So a lot of these smaller names have more room to run. So having it as a small percentage of your portfolio, I'm not mad about, maybe 10% or less, but it's going to be very, very high risk. And I would make sure the portfolio as a whole right now is more leaning towards the value side. Even though this is growth, it doesn't mean you can't have any, but I would be leaning more towards the value side of the market as opposed to this would be leaning towards the growth side. But it's a good fund if you're looking to get into or have exposure to the small cap growth part of the market. Thanks for the call, Raphael. Now, in the next Invest Talk, the story behind this headline: hedge fund / China exposure amid ongoing regulatory crackdown. According to one high profile firm, hedge fund exposure to Chinese equities and indices listed in the U.S. have dropped to a 2-year low. That story Steve will get to tomorrow, but for now I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your questions live at 888-99-CHART.
Of all the finance and investing podcasts and all the downloads in all the world, you've discovered Invest Talk.
At this time, do you think it would be better to keep it in this bond or move it to cash?
Looks like the sector is down today, so just thinking about, you know, potentially buying the dip.
And since Invest Talk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are committed to answering your questions with their unique blend of expert insight and unbiased guidance, you've got to ask yourself one question. Why haven't you called Invest Talk?
Hey, it's James from Australia. I'm loving the podcast.
You know you listen. You know you should call. You know you want to call.
So I was wondering the best options for long-term growth.
You'll get a reliable answer and the same positive feeling that tens of thousands of Invest Talk callers have already experienced.
Thank you so much. I love the show.
Don't forget to call Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART. The stock market is volatile. It's constantly changing. So how are you positioned? Is your portfolio properly balanced, or are you taking unnecessary risks? You can get guidance anytime for free if you go to investtalk.com and take the brief Riskalyze quiz.
Now, since 2013, mutual fund companies have rebranded 64 mutual funds to have names that represent that they are investing in more sustainable businesses. Last year alone, they rebranded 25 of those funds. And what these funds are doing is they're adopting investment strategies that utilize companies' environmental, social, and governance performance to pick stocks. Now, that's at least what they are saying. But many of the funds that are actively managing were experiencing chronic outflows prior to these rebranding. And 35 of those 64 were suffering from these withdrawals over the past 3 years before they went to quote-unquote green. And of the 64, of the 35, 13 have now began to reverse that trend. So the marketing of these funds has worked. For example, the $1.5 billion USAA Sustainable World Fund holds nearly $100 million in shares of 47 fossil fuel companies. And that is the issue here, is that, yes, there is a move towards ESG, towards funds that have these green ratings. But the problem is there's no uniform standard of what is a green company and what is not. Everyone has their own filters and classifications of what if a company is green or environmentally sustainable, if they have good governance, etc. Now, if you look at the USA Sustainable World Fund, which, like I said, holds $100 million in shares of 47 fossil fuel companies, says that they add in the fund's prospectus. They note that ESG ratings were considered, but fund managers may disagree with a rater's conclusion. Basically saying the fund manager can kind of do whatever they want. That they're incorporating ESG in the consideration, but it's not the end-all be-all, even though the name says USA Sustainable World Fund. Another one, American Century Investment Fund Equity Fund. They've been bringing in new money, but they still own things like ConocoPhillips. And their rationale is that, hey, they're becoming more sustainable, even though still a very small percentage of their business. Yeah, they're investing in green energy, but it's still a very small percentage of their business. So these rebrands, in a lot of ways, are simply marketing gimmicks. And I get what they're trying to do. And I get that there's no general standard. And that's what worries me here, is that who is going to create the standard? How do you know as an investor? If you're trying to invest in ESG, how do you know that that is actually happening on the ground? Are you going to dig into the funds and pick out the names of the holdings and say to the manager, what is this? Why is this in here? What is classified as ESG? That's my big point here. And most of the time, it's really just more marketing than it is making a real difference. And so make sure that if you're looking for that, you need to do a deep dive on what their process is, and you have to agree with it. Now let's keep things moving and a pivot to the InvestTalk voice bank for a question that came in earlier on 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, love the show, listen to it frequently. I have a question on Affirm, AFRM. I have a pretty large position and they have an earnings report coming up on Thursday. I just wanted to get your take and see if it was going to be a negative or a positive as far as which direction that stock was going to roll on earnings report day. Any information you could give me, I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Well, I don't know what they are going to do on earnings report day. It looks like, actually, if I'm looking at this correctly, it might have been pretty good. Yeah, because I'm looking, it's 109. Let me go to a different source here. Yeah, well, the answer is it's good. Unfortunately, I didn't. That's not something that I had great hindsight. I'm just looking at it here. They had earnings after hours today. They're up 25%, it looks like, after hours from 92 to 109.50, 110, somewhere in there. So you have a large position, and this is a growth name. This is a company that still, let me take a look at the data here. Yeah, they're still not making money. Let me see what their... Yeah, stock did well. Revenue up 71% after hours. I know I believe they did a deal with Amazon, so there's probably some guidance in regards to that the market liked. But they still lost 52 cents a share. And it's a very competitive space. Remember, this is just a lending platform. And so I would be, if you have a large position, sounds like you were a bit worried about this, I would be using this to trim your position, right size it down to a reasonable amount, maybe 3-5% of your overall portfolio. So I'm glad it did well for you, but don't get too happy. Make sure you have good money management skills, good portfolio management skills, and rebalance when you have a day like this, especially in a name that's going to be very volatile over time. Now let's make a two-caller voice bank questions in a row. This came from a listener in Wisconsin.
Hi, my name is Jim. I'm from Wisconsin. I have a question about something I've been hearing lately. I've heard that the largest transfer of wealth in American history is going on right now. I believe it's got something to do with inflation, the way it's going right now, but I was wondering if you could explain the fundamentals of that or what the notion is to all that. Thanks.
I don't believe it has anything to do with inflation. This has more to do with baby boomers, who are estimated to pass $68 trillion down to their next generation. This is the time most baby boomers are now retired. And I know there's a lot of you out there probably listening. Unfortunately, you're the generation before baby boomers, they're almost all gone. And so the baby boomers are the next to go and pass that on to the next generation. And so that's really what the greatest wealth transfer in history is really all about. There's so much equity tied up into their homes, tied up in their equity and stock portfolios. And so this is really that question is, who are they transferring it to? The Gen X and the millennials generation, that's where the money is mainly going. And so I don't think it has anything to do with inflation. It's really just about the demographics of the country. And there's been the baby boomers have been in charge for a long period of time. Just go look at Congress. There's still a ton of them there. And they have passed a lot of policies that have helped baby boomers, especially the Fed, lowering interest rates, creating these high stock prices, high equity or high home prices. That's been the main driver, and that's why they have most of the wealth. When you repress interest rates down to such low levels, those that own assets will benefit the most. And the baby boomers own the most assets, and that's why you're seeing this large transfer of wealth. Now, summer is all but over, and soon we'll head into the fourth quarter, and you're seeing a little market volatility here today, and I want to remind you that you need to be prepared to handle these type of circumstances. You need to know what your portfolio has, what type of risk you're taking, and does it meet your goals and your risk tolerance levels. And if you need help with that, I encourage you to reach out to myself or Steve Peasley to set up a free portfolio review assessment via telephone or go to meeting. What we do on those calls is go over your portfolio, your risk tolerance level, your financial plan, if you have one, or help build one, or start to build one, and then figure out how to make your financial path a lot easier, a lot more successful, a lot more fruitful, and get you towards financial freedom faster. And that's what we do on these calls. So I encourage you to take advantage of these. We do them at our company, KPP Financial, where we operate with the same philosophy of independent thinking and shared success, where we implement unbiased guidance and parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So I encourage you to send me a message through investtalk.com or call our KPP Financial offices in Irvine, California at 800-557-5461. We'd love to help you in any way. Now, next up, a question concerning covered calls that's coming up here on InvestTalk.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. And Steve and Justin, thank you for your loyalty. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments. Your rating is a vote of confidence that leads to higher visibility and causes more people to discover and listen to InvestTalk. So please tell your friends and family members about the free InvestTalk downloads at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and InvestTalk.com. Remember to include your brief question when you review and rate on iTunes. And of course, your calls are always welcome 24/7. Don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Justin in North Carolina. I have a significantly overweight position in Oracle, And I like the company long term, but think this is maybe a good possible covered call option for me here. I don't have a lot of experience with covered calls, but do you think an overweight position in a company you like is a good opportunity to consider covered calls? And if so, what would be the strike price targets you would sort of look at? Thank you.
I believe he was talking about Oracle, if I heard that correctly. And Oracle has been consolidating up here right around the $90 level for quite some time. And if you are looking to sell a covered call, I'd have to bring up my system here. But let me start broadly. Now, if you're looking at selling covered calls, a lot of people will look at the premium they're getting and they're more focused on that. I like to look more from a technical perspective, where there's support and resistance. In a call, they're typically looking at where there's the resistance. Now, with Oracle, because it's been consolidating for a while and it's near the highs on the chart, you're really going to have to go back many years to see if there's any overhead resistance on the stock. And it's near an all-time high, so there isn't. So I would be more focused on finding the right premium because of that, because there's no upward resistance. Now on Oracle or any stock, I would be looking out around 30 to 60 days. That's the amount of time for expiration that you want to be selling, because you're still getting good premium, but your time decay over the next month is going to be very fast. And so you're looking pretty much at the October strikes, and I would be looking at the 92.50 strikes. You're going to get about $2, a little over $2 per share for that call. And you'd still give you a little more upside there, but hedge you about $2 on the downside. So that's the strike I would go with, an October 92.50 call to bring that nice premium. And you should still get another dividend, it looks like, between now and expiration as well. So I hope that helped. Now, I want to highlight a pretty interesting story here. And this is the fact that the SEC is investigating Coinbase over a lending program the company plans to market, and now it looks like they're going to sue the company over the offering. They got a Wells notice on this. And CEO Brian Armstrong went to Twitter and went on a rant, calling the SEC's actions as sketchy, with intimidation tactics, etc. And what was so interesting about this rant was that it was pretty embarrassing for Brian Armstrong, because he really didn't understand what exactly a security was. He was shocked to know that if you are paying interest on a deposit, or you're paying interest on a deposit and the principal is not guaranteed like it is with a bank with FDIC insurance, then it is a security. You didn't know that. Even though that's in acts that have been securities acts that have going back to the 30s. And so it just shows you that even though you might be the CEO of a large company, especially in the crypto space, doesn't mean that you understand the financial world, the financial system. And crypto companies in the past have complained that regulators won't explain whether products should be classified as securities or not. Well, look at the history. Look at the laws. You don't go to the SEC and ask the SEC to explain how something works. You hire a securities lawyer and say, this is what I want to do. Can I do it? And they give you advice because they look at the laws. And so it's really shocking to me that you have the CEO of a public company, pretty much the largest broker within the crypto space, so lost when it comes to being able to navigate basic securities laws and understanding of what a security product is or isn't, and can't figure out how to hire a lawyer themselves. So this is a good example of how crazy and wild the crypto space is when you have the leader of the largest public company in the space being so frankly, unprofessional. So just wanted to highlight that. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here, to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk. Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Is it delivering the types of gains you want and need to achieve financial freedom? Well, turn up the volume, because there are many questions that deserve unbiased answers. And Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Stephen, Justin. My name is Wes. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. And I was calling because I'm a young financial professional in the financial services industry. And I was looking at my 401k options and had done some research on small cap value and small cap growth and how they tend to outperform other asset classes in the long haul due to their risk return trade-off. And was wondering why someone young like myself wouldn't just put everything 100% in like a small cap value index, because it tends to be a little cheaper and outperform growth in the long haul. And I was wondering if there's really any reasons to react to negative downturns in the market, or if a buy and hold strategy till I'm closer to retirement could make sense. But look forward to hearing your insight on it, and I enjoy listening to your show.
All right, great question. And he's right. Smaller cap funds of almost all stripes tend to outperform over the long term. Now, in the medium term, they also tend to have a lot more volatility. And so that's the first question, is can you handle that level of volatility? You sound well-read, you're in the industry, so why you probably have a lot of willingness and ability to take risk. And so that's probably where you should lean as well. Now, there's no guarantee that will past performance will repeat. That's the industry mantra. You probably know that. So just because it has happened doesn't mean it's going to happen in the future, but the odds are in your favor. And so you're right. You should probably lean that way. And if you have the ability and willingness to take a lot of risk because you're young, because you have decades to go, you should probably lean towards small cap value or growth, depending on how you feel, or maybe a little bit of both. So great question. And before we close, I want to touch on the debt ceiling. And Treasury Secretary Yellen has officially, formally notify Congress that the measures that she has taken since August 1st are going to run out sometime in October. And this is something that Congress has flirted with a few times in the past, 2001 and 2013 notably, that they aren't going to raise the debt ceiling. And so it's usually political posturing. But the big question is, can the markets handle this type of political posturing in the midst of still an ongoing pandemic of, or I would call it endemic at this point, but markets are still worried about what is happening with COVID cases and the Delta variant, and just a lot of uncertainty around the tapering, et cetera. So adding this on top of that potential error by Congress as a whole, could mean a larger pullback in the market, more market disruptions. And we know Congress doesn't like that. Now, Republicans have vowed not to cooperate with Democrats to raise the borrowing limits, and saying that it needs to be part of the partisan budget reconciliation package that is going through Congress right now. And saying that that's how you can get through. We don't want to vote for it. And if you want to raise it, it has to be part of that package. But the administration and Democratic leaders are saying that they want Republicans to be part of the agreement to increase the ceiling. And remember, this doesn't authorize new spending, but allows Treasury to borrow more to pay for things that have already been passed by both Republicans and Democrats. So that's really the story here, is they've already agreed to spend it on both sides of the aisle. They just have to agree to allow the Treasury to issue more debt in order to spend on the things that both sides have already approved. Now, the S&P 500 did downgrade the U.S. credit rating in 2011. And it looks like the drop dead date is going to be November 2nd. And investors have started to price in a short-term impasse over this debt ceiling sometime in the month of October, November. You're seeing that kind of in the futures markets, etc. So expect more of a battle. Expect a lot of chest bumping and political posturing. But at the end of the day, they will raise it because both sides love to spend. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening. And we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads. Now over 34 million. So get yours anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. Your rating helps spread the word. And if you leave a question with your rating, we will prioritize your answers. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listening line at 888-99-CHART.